There were several questions about working with difficulty, working with pain. And so I'll offer a few things right now, and then possibly follow up a little bit more this afternoon. So just to kind of state the questions that I, a couple of the questions. How do I work with intense pain, experiencing chronic pain and anxiety along with it? It's been helpful to relax and notice the aversion that's connected with it, but are there other suggestions on practice that's useful when the mind is plagued by persistent, unpleasant experience? sometimes I'm aware of difficulty, of struggle in the mind, and the awareness understands something and it releases, but other times it seems like the awareness doesn't, it doesn't stop. The thing is, on other occasions, the mere awareness is not enough to avoid the mind's stubborn march towards suffering. I like that. That's a lovely way to put it. So some reflections about that. First, a little bit about working with pain. it's important to recognize how often pain comes with aversion. And if the pain is very intense and the aversion is very strong, at times what happens is the mind gets pulled into the aversion. But the aversion is essentially stronger than our capacity to be with either the aversion or the pain. And if that's happening, if the mind is overwhelmed by the pain and overwhelmed by the aversion to the pain, then that's not the time to try to be with that experience. It's useful at that point to try to find some way to step aside from it. And this is true too with difficult states of mind. There are certain states of mind, difficult states of mind that come up where it's bringing mindfulness to it just feels like you just get wrapped right into it. It's like the momentum of the difficult mind state is stronger than our capacity to meet it with mindfulness. That would not be the time to try to be mindful of it. And so it can be useful. So, you know, the basic practice here is receive what's happening. And yet when there's something that in attempting to receive it, we can't always just settle back and say, oh yes, this is what's happening. Sometimes what's happening is overwhelming. Sometimes what's happening is we're not able to simply say, oh yes, that's what's happening. There's too much conditioning around the reactivity to it, too much overwhelm. And so if that's happening, then it's useful to have some strategies to help you step aside from it. And I'm just going to name a couple briefly here. What I would say in general is if you have tools that have helped you in the past to find balance when there's a struggle in the mind, use them. If it's metta, use it. If it's opening your eyes and taking a walk, use it. If it's listening to music and being, you know, kind of attending to music, use it. Whatever it is, I mean, it's really useful to have a tool to help us turn our attention away from something that's very strong, kind of magnetizing the attention to something that's more neutral. I find myself personally that when there's a very strong reactive pattern going, if I try to turn myself to something pleasant, the mind can rebel. It's kind of like the mind, that part of the mind that's struggling is saying, yeah, you're avoiding me, you know, you're trying to just deny that I'm here. But if I turn to something neutral, it seems like that part of the mind that's struggling is more willing to kind of let that be. Let that be what the mind attends to. So in this shift of attention, this kind of taking the attention out of something that is strong and placing it somewhere else, that has to be done without aversion. It's kind of what I would do often is to kind of bow to it and say, I see you and I see you're strong. You're asking for attention. And I'm my mindfulness isn't strong enough right now. So, you know, you can take a walk with me or you can sit in the room with me, but I'm going to put my attention on this right now, so that it's not a repressing of the experience. It's more of a setting aside, of a redirecting of the attention. So that's a part of our practice. We have to have the wisdom to recognize when we can be mindful of something and when we can't, when mindfulness is not strong enough to meet something. And to honor that, not with resistance and anger, but with a compassion for ourselves, and to use some of our strategies. Now, this is a place where the doing comes into the practice more, where we may have to pick up some tools. So that kind of redirecting the attention, picking something neutral for myself, often I would pick just simple contact, feet on the ground, hands touching, just something very simple, often outside of the core area of the body, because this is where there tends to be a lot of, the emotion is felt often in this area of the body. And if we're using the breath, for example, as a what we think of as a neutral place to come back to, often the breath is involved with the emotion, that those strong emotions. And so it can almost loop us right back in to the difficulty. So I find bringing attention to something outside of the core area, feet, hands, hearing sometimes can be useful. I will also open my eyes and kind of orient to different objects in the room. One a second, just pick a new object. Just know I'm looking at different objects. That can be a helpful tool to help the mind settle down. Even if you do that for 90 seconds, that can be really supportive to let the mind calm down. So those are some of the strategies if the mind is overwhelmed. But when the mind can be with something, you know, when the aversion is, you know, happening, but there's a kind of capacity to be with it, then it's useful to, you know, have some wisdom to help you kind of frame what you're doing. So with the exploration around pain, in particular, you know, if you're looking at painful experience, painful body sensation, it's useful to remember that what we're trying to do as we explore it is not to get rid of the pain, but to understand how pain and the relationships to it function in our mind. One of the key things we see as we explore pain is that aversion comes in. So there's the physical pain and then there's the aversion. And we can begin to recognize that as the aversion gets stronger, it's like the dial on the aversion, it goes up and it goes down. We can see as the aversion gets stronger, the pain gets stronger. As the aversion gets weaker, often the pain gets weaker. And so we see actually a connection between body and mind there. And we see that a lot of what we call pain has to do with how we are resisting it, how we are pushing against it. It's like the aversion is a multiplier. It's a magnifier on the pain. And when the aversion falls away, we can notice at times we might even have the experience of the aversion falling away completely. And there's just the unpleasant experience. And then it's kind of interesting because we can recognize that most of what we call pain actually lies in the aversion, and that the physical unpleasantness, when there is no aversion, when there's no aversion to physical unpleasantness, it's not even experienced as what we would call pain. It's experienced as unpleasant experience. So this kind of exploration around the relationship between the body and mind it helps us to understand how the conditioning unfolds, the kind of the feedback loop between how the mind is with it. So this is essentially noticing the relationship to the pain stronger, the relationship gets weaker, the aversion weakens, the pain isn't as difficult. So we see this kind of feedback loop, this kind of relationship. It can be useful, and Sayadaw actually recommends this, it can be useful in exploring pain, especially if the pain is related to, you know, something that you're, you know, the still physical posture in sitting meditation. You know, often in the still posture, we do experience physical pain after we've been sitting for a while. And, you know, if that's what's happening, then give yourself an opportunity to explore this aversion, physical pain relationship. But tell yourself at the beginning that it's okay to move when it gets too tiring, you know, when it gets too hard to explore anymore, that it's fine to move. That kind of container in which doing the exploration, being one of allowing and permissiveness, often gives the mind a little more space to explore, to be willing to explore this dynamic between the aversion and the pain. So what I would generally say is, if there is aversion to pain, it's like the attention should be, I mean, you know, the pain is there, but rather than trying to be with the pain there, it's more that it needs to be with the aversion with the pain. If we're just trying to dive in and be with the pain and ignore the aversion, then the aversion may, and I've done this many times actually, through aversion in the mind. Because of aversion in the mind, I have dived into the physical pain in order that I see it in a particular way so that it goes away. You know, that sometimes as the mind kind of dives deeply into the precise experience, that the moment-to-moment like dynamic experience, the shooting and the stabbing and the sparking sensations of the pain, it changes in quality, but the whole motivation has been aversion. And so if there is aversion to the pain, it's really important to acknowledge that, to know there's aversion, and to see that relationship. When the aversion falls away, that's when you can really be curious about that dance of sensations and see what we actually call pain is nothing that's solid or stable. So if there can be a kind of a curiosity around the whole patterning of it, and this is true with difficult mind states as well. having a sense of curiosity around what's here. How does it affect the body? So if there's a difficult mind state, anger, for instance, frustration, irritation. So that's happening. There's thoughts there. There's body sensations. It's kind of like often with a difficult mind state, it's like a big kind of mess of stuff. You know, threads of thoughts and threads of emotions, maybe multiple emotions, multiple views coming in around what should or shouldn't be happening. So it's like a big ball of yarn that's all tied up and tangled up in knots. And what I often suggest, especially with this practice where, you know, we're not exploring like trying to dive in and like pull everything apart. It's very receptive. So settling back and it's like, okay, big mess is happening. Mind is caught up in this frustrating mess of stuff. Kind of like holding that big messy ball of yarn with wide arms and seeing kind of what is wanting to show up. It's like that messy ball of yarn is very dynamic. It's rotating, maybe more like a wriggling mass of worms or something, you know. It's like it's all like, you know, this thread of it comes out and kind of highlights and pulls us, and then this thread of it comes out and highlights and pulls us. So if we can just kind of settle back and say, okay, yep, this is a big mess. And what's the obvious piece about it? Oh, right now it's that fear. And right now it's that thought and that agitation. Just kind of taking in the evolving moment to moment flow of it. And then noticing how we are in relationship to it. We don't like it. We're frustrated by the whole pattern. So the kind of the wide approach, the holding it with wide arms, and then allowing each piece of it to kind of show up and be known as it appears. For me, this kind of approach has been really useful for very persistent patterns that come up in different flavors, different ways. For me, self-hatred was a very strong pattern. And, so instead of like trying to dive into it when it came up, you know, it's like at first when I was exploring, I'd be like, okay, there's self-hatred. I'm going to figure this out. Okay, like immerse myself in it so I can see all the pieces and get rid of it. That approach, kind of the dive-in approach, motivated by aversion. And also not very respectful of just like what was wanting to be seen. And so as I began to explore it in this more gentle way, it's like, okay, well, what's showing up now? It's like each time that pattern would appear with this more broad, okay, what piece of the experience is obvious right now? It's like each time it came up, I got a little different perspective on that pattern. Like a different piece of the puzzle almost was revealed. And just patience with it revealing itself. This practice takes a lot of patience. What I did find over time, though, was that there were ways that with the self-hatred, the mind began to, first of all, be more at ease around the self-hatred. That was a huge piece. That it was no longer quite so threatened by it, was able to understand some of the conditioning of how it came to be. That made a big difference. You know, that really allowed the mind to be more okay with it happening, seeing that it was just conditioned patterns unfolding. It almost just became the of course this is happening. These were the conditions of the way the life was shaped. Of course this happens. That made it much easier to hold. And so very slowly over time, it's like some of those threads began to weaken, fall away. The whole pattern became much looser, more able to be held and seen. So a very broad approach can be useful. And sometimes if there's something very strong that kind of pulls our attention, it can be useful. This is a slightly different approach than what I was just saying. It can be useful at times to know that pattern is happening. But sometimes if you find yourself kind of pulled into it, like I was describing, almost like going into the microscope of wanting to like put the self-hatred under a microscope and look at it. It's like, okay, that's happening. And the mind just kind of just gets absorbed into that to look at it. Sometimes that can exacerbate the pattern and take us into it, can take us out of mindfulness. And so sometimes it can be useful as an intermediate strategy between setting it aside and attending to something else entirely, and the strategy of opening to it, being aware of what is coming up around it. An intermediate strategy might be to notice it as one thing among actually thousands of things that are happening in the present moment. So there's this pattern that's arising, this experience of, in this case, self-hatred that I was describing, observing, of self-hatred arising, or depression was another one I worked on this way. So depression's arising, but there's a lot of other things happening. There's seeing happening. There's hearing happening. I was often walking. It's like, yep, and the body's moving through space and the feet are touching the ground. Just kind of like cycling through various areas of experience to kind of take away that magnetic pull into the difficulty. And yet not avoiding it. So at times recognizing, yep, there's that depression, and there's seeing happening, and there's hearing happening. Oh, and there's the depression again, and there's the body, there's the feet on the ground. Oh, there's the depression again. So it's kind of like consciously making the container of what the mind is attending to bigger. So those are some strategies around exploring difficulty. And I may bring some more things, and there may be some more questions this afternoon. There's one more piece, and this comes from a question that was submitted, and it kind of is a, it's going to lead me into the next little piece that I want to talk about. A person described an experience related to a close family member, a younger family member who's struggling with some addiction, and the pain of that family member, the difficulty, the struggle that family member is caught by, and the severity of that. So in this description that was typed in, I got a lot of sense in a way of the challenge. It's a very challenging situation to meet. And the person acknowledged, I'm sitting with this reality, willingly looking, open, calm, and not experiencing clarity or intuitive intelligence. So this is another kind of exploration around difficulty. In this case, there's the difficulty of a situation, a family member. We can't control what our family members do. We have to, the teaching on equanimity, the reflection on equanimity around close friends and family and in general is to reflect that all beings have their own journey to live, that all beings own their own karma, their own intentions and actions, and people have to make their own choices. That to me sounds like the way this the questioner is exploring this, is acknowledging you're the owner of your actions. Your choices are your own to make. I can't make them for you. And so that is the reflection that supports or moves us in the direction of equanimity. And yet a piece here that I'm not sure about, because the description, the question was written largely as a description of what is happening to the family member. And there were just a couple pieces. So the person described that they're very distracted. It's hard to be present. And that they're sitting with what's here. Open, willingly being with it, being calm with it, asking, but not experiencing clarity. So the piece here that I would encourage in an exploration is, what are the emotions that you are having in connection to your family member? When I read this, I feel an ache a sadness, a longing for ease and peace for the family member. I also potentially, and if I were in this family, I might also feel anger, frustration, confusion, and maybe some shame around the anger. I'm like, I shouldn't feel that. So all of that, whatever the emotions are in relation to the situation, that's a lot of what needs to be opened to. The question is written, what I hear essentially is the question is written, they're open to the situation, open to what's happening externally, but also need to be open to what's happening internally, fully open, fully honoring all of the messiness and pain of the emotion that's there. That can be really scary. It takes courage to meet that. And potentially, it can be overwhelming. And so, you know, knowing when the mind has the capacity to open to that, all of that, those feelings, and when it's time to give yourself a break from it, set it aside. So part of what I often do in these meetings when I teach this in person, I've never had this many people in person though, so and this forum changes how the interaction happens. But often what I do in person is a piece of the exploration is asking people to talk about what's happening in their daily lives and how are you responding to it? What are you noticing? A kind of a report or a description of what you're noticing in your daily lives in relationship to being present with what's happening. And to me, this that what I read here is kind of like that. It was a description of what the questioner was experiencing in their life and a little bit about how they were with it. And in that, what I heard was some pieces potentially missing, which I just spoke to, the emotional terrain. Now, it's possible that the questioner was experiencing that. I didn't have a way. I mean, I didn't ask the person to elaborate in an email exchange or anything like that. But I heard potentially in just the description, what they chose to describe, that they didn't choose to describe the emotional side of it. And so that is where I kind of go in. It's like, okay, what's happening there? Can you open to that? And so this actually is, it's almost like an exploration or a tool for exploring what's happening in our daily lives is to kind of be curious, to describe to ourselves perhaps. And in the class when I have it in person, I ask pretty much everybody gets a chance to describe usually a couple times during the week what they're noticing. And that's not possible with this format. But what I think might be useful is for you to describe your experience to yourself in this way of not what's important in this kind of describing your experience is not to tell the story so much, just enough of the kind of context to set it in a frame. But then the biggest piece of the exploration is, what do you notice about your experience? How are you? How's your body? What are the emotions? What is the flavor of the thoughts, perhaps? Are they angry, confused, frightened? What beliefs and views might be present? And what are you noticing? So when you're exploring things in your daily life, what are you noticing? This could be something simple, like, you know, you find yourself waking up in the vegetable chopping in your kitchen, and you begin to be aware of how you can be aware of not only that you're doing that, but that there's somebody in the room that you're having a conversation with, and that you're able to be aware of the conversation and the chopping vegetables and fully aware all at the same time. So